Welcome to the Internet Advisor Podcast. I'm your host and producer, Foster Brown. Along with my co-host, Gary Baker, and our team of experts, we've been helping people like you since 1998 with your computer problems, introducing you to valuable resources, and promoting tech enterprise throughout Michigan. The Internet Advisor is a two-hour podcast recorded every week at the studios of historic WJR Radio in Detroit. Only the second hour of our show, which features listeners' questions, is heard live from 5 to 6 p.m. every Saturday on WJR. However, both hours of the show are available each week on this podcast and are streamed to our affiliates across the state of Michigan. We're also proud to be part of Detroit's newest and fastest-growing podcast network, PodcastDetroit.com. And now, here are your hosts with this week's Internet Advisor.
Welcome to the Internet Advisor, your place for answers to your computer questions since 1998, with your co-hosts Gary Baker and Foster Brown and their team of tech experts. The door is always open at InternetAdvisor.net, on Facebook, and through Twitter. But right now it's time to get you in touch with your helpful hosts on this week's edition of Internet Advisor.
Welcome to the Internet Advisor. Hi, I'm Foster Brown, co-host and producer of the program. And we've got a great show lined up for you today. Talk about scary. How about all the things that have been happening on the internet, sharing our information? It's kind of scary. Where can you go without getting into trouble? Well, we're going to talk with Richard Steenen about that today. He's a man who's written a book called There Will Be Cyber War. That's scary as well. All that's coming up, plus a review of the new Apple TV, all coming up on the Internet Advisor. Well, it's a delight to be with you live here on WJR, our flagship station. My name is Foster Brown, the co-host and producer of the Internet Advisor. And matter of fact, we're even in Studio A. How do you like that for getting back to good old times?
We had to bribe our engineer, Rich, to let us back over here.
And that's Mr. Gary Baker, my co-host for lo these many years. Good to have you in studio, Gary.
It's great to be here on this trick-or-treat afternoon.
That's right, yeah.
A few tricks and maybe some treats.
Yeah, that's right. And We're missing all the candy, Eddie Rudell.
Oh, and I wore this costume for no reason.
So that's your excuse.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, and I thought that actually the cow looks rather fetching as Snow White, don't you?
Are you referring to his... Yes. His snowy white hair.
Yeah, that's right. That's Kel Carson, who is our Mac expert. Matter of fact, a little later on the program, we're going to ask him. It gives us... some highlights about the Apple TV, which is the new console that's just...
He's actually in costume, too. He's coming as a ice skating judge, tech guy for ice skating.
So. You know, I just don't know what to say after all of this.
after those introductions. Well, coming in just a moment, matter of fact, we're going to be introducing our first guest, Richard Steenen, who's going to be on the line with us from Baltimore. He's been on the East Coast and has an exciting thing that's been going on. But I wanted to give a little background before that, Gary. This has been Cybersecurity Month, and as a matter of fact, you were... you attended, I believe, the North American Cybersecurity Conference.
That's right. It was, Sunday evening was an event for some of the speakers, mm-hmm. and then all day on Monday.
Yeah.
And there was actually a healthcare summit going on kind of at the opposite end of Jefferson, down at the Rensen.
Boy.
And everybody was talking about cybersecurity because, you know what? It matters to healthcare, too.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah. Yeah.
After, what was the healthcare that got hit so hard?
That was Anthem over
Anthem.
In California,
Anthem.
Which does a lot of the Blue Cross and
yep.
happened to hit me as an HP employee.
Yeah. Yep.
But it was a great event. This was started by our governor, who is one tough nerd, as everyone knows. and he was there along with a number of other states, as well as the federal government, showed up because our state is leading in the war on cyber, the war to institute some cybersecurity, not only for our public-private sectors, but for all of the different industries as well.
Right. So it's exciting.
It was a great conference.
Somebody who has been watching that whole cybersecurity field for many, many years is a gentleman who is with us right now. That's Richard Steenen. Richard, welcome to the program.
It was great to be here, Foster. Yeah. Hey, Gary.
Hey, Richard. Hey, we missed you. I think this was the first time you missed the Cybersecurity Summit.
Yeah, there's so much going on. As you know, Cybersecurity Month, of course, Michigan's got theirs. I think Wisconsin had theirs going on last week.
Yep.
And Cyber Maryland had theirs this week as well.
Yeah, everybody, there were a lot of people that were, you know, leaving that afternoon to go to other states. So it it was interesting, everybody, well, because it's Cybersecurity Month. And this was, I think, the first time you weren't speaking. You must have been speaking somewhere else.
Yeah, I was speaking at a conference in Washington, the very first Cybersecurity World Summit. But it was a very small conference, about 150 attendees. But they wanted me to talk on the topic of my book, and it seemed perfect time to launch the book officially at the National Press Club.
By the way,
wow, that was great, because there were only about 800 people at the North American Cyber Summit.
Wow.
Can you believe it? It's getting bigger and bigger every year.
Well, Richard, one of the things that I wanted to talk about was that book launch that you had, There Will Be Cyber War is the name of the book, and I understand it had quite a good reception in Washington, D.C.
Yeah, it was a great reception. I was very gratified. A lot of friends showed up from a broad swath of people interested in cybersecurity. There were people from think tanks, a couple of Gartner people, former CIO of the Department of Energy, the CISO for the Navy, and of course some journalists, because it was in the press club.
That's excellent. Now, let me gather all this together, because we're not going to have as much time as I thought we'd have to talk with you. Although I'm going to take a little more time after the break a little bit. But after all this talk of and all these conferences, we're still hemorrhaging data. This year, it seems, if anything, after all the studies and all the efforts at cybersecurity, has been one of the worst for leaks of information. Am I wrong on that, Richard, or is that perception very close?
No, very, very close. And the additional perception that there's no end in sight is true as well.
Yeah.
2016, we'll see just as many, if not many, many more damaging cyber attacks.
Well, there are two types of companies, right? There's the companies that have been hacked, and then there's the companies that will be hacked again. and the problem really is that the bad guys are they only have to find one way in to a company's environment where, we have to protect against all ways in.
Right.
Well, I guess the question comes back, and maybe it's in the minds of some of our listeners right now, is, guys, with all these conferences you're having, it's nice that you're enjoying getting together in these very prestigious places with prestigious names, et cetera, but it doesn't seem to be doing anything. Any dent in this?
How do you know it's not doing anything?
By the number of pieces of data that are leaking. This year being the worst so far.
Just think, if it wasn't doing anything, then there might be twice as many. You can't tell, and that's the problem.
When we come back, Richard, I want to see get your response to that. And then what I also want to talk about is, how do we train our next generation of cybersecurity experts? So we're going to be talking with Richard Steenen about that. And we got another guest in studio in just a little bit to talk about the future of Detroit and making it maybe the new Silicon Valley, not the old Rust Belt. Welcome back to the Internet Advisor. And by the way, on a regular basis, we do this from 4 to 6 every Saturday night. You may not hear us because of certain young men dressed in green and white thunder down the football field during this time a lot of times. And the other thing is, their basketball season is coming up, and they're going to be taken to the hardwood floor.
And I think basketball may be just as good as football is this year Michigan State Spartan fans, so that ought to be fun.
But the good news is, I guess, for those of you who are maybe fans of the Internet Advisor, is to know that every week we continue to record this program. As a matter of fact, we have some affiliates around our state that continue to take this program each week, and you can also listen to it on Sunday nights. We post a podcast, which is a recording minus the ads, and you get to listen to the show all over again.
Yeah, download it and listen to ours. Listen to IT and the D.
And many other wonderful.
M Squared, the Mike and Matt show.
Right. We will talk more about those things, but there's lots of resources for you, and we'll continue to talk with you about them throughout the program. By the way, internetadvisor.net is our homepage. Back to our conversation with Richard Steen. And Richard, I got to tell you, Richard's an expert in security, has written a number of books. One of them was There Will Be Cyber War. We talked about that. But I have already been chewed on for being an heretic, Richard, during the break by Gary Baker, because the question I asked was, with all these conferences that are going on, we don't seem to have made any dent. We don't seem to have made any dent in the amount of data that's being stolen. If this year, 2015, is any indication, we're hemorrhaging data. Are we really making any kind of headway?
Yeah, and there was a statistic that came out that showed the growth in breaches and, you know, length of time people are breached before they discover it. And part of the question might be, are we just getting better breach disclosure? And are we getting better you know, news coverage of the breaches?
Yeah.
But I think it's all of the above. So, the, you know, the severity of breaches is going up, and the number of targets that the hackers are going after is going up as well. So, you know, in Gary's defense, the organizations I talk to every day are doing a fabulous job of defending their networks. They really know what they're doing. They're applying technology. They're getting access to budgets. And they're doing a really, really good job. The ones you read about in the paper are not those.
Yeah. Cal, you had a question, I think.
So then the question I have for you, Richard, in both in Gary's defense and in Foster's defense, is that if we didn't do as good of a job as we're doing right now, by what fold would we have breaches going on now? Would it be twice as many? Would it be five times as many? Just a guesstimate.
10 times as many.
Wow.
Easily.
Yeah, wow. I would agree with Richard. You know, there are companies that are saying, wow, we really have to do something, and we are. The problem is, right, the bad guys are getting better too.
Yeah.
And just because we're getting better doesn't mean that the bad guys aren't getting better just as fast and maybe faster.
Yeah. Yeah. And I was trying to think of an analogy of this. I mean, look what happened to Target Corporation, right?
Oh, yeah.
And they're just barely coming back as it is, and, right. And we have another big shopping season coming up. But that is something that the everyday consumer is familiar with. Home Depot got hit, Kmart got hit, but a lot of these companies we've never heard of before, but yet they're in the background. They do the management of all this stuff.
And to be fair, right, with Target, it wasn't Target Direct.
Exactly.
It was a vendor to Target that didn't do what they should have to protect their own network, and Target didn't protect themselves against their own partners.
Yes.
Yeah. Right?
Thank
and
you.
So they breached the HVAC corporate company that works for Target and got in that way.
Yeah.
And so there's all sorts of ways. And that is the problem. The smaller companies have got to get on board now with protection. But just because even a large company, if you think you're doing everything right and we're finding problems faster, we're finding breaches faster, but like as Richard said, you know, maybe we're just finding them faster.
What, Richard, I want to ask another question quickly. Do you have a follow-up, Ed, on that?
No. But I'm going to say, if you want to stay in business, this is what you have to do, basically.
Well, one of the things I want to ask you quickly, because we don't have much time right now, Richard, is you wrote an article for Forbes, which I found interesting. It was called Welcome Back Symantec. And Symantec is a company we used to love to kick around because the antivirus software was just a resource hog.
Well, that's because we used to love them, and then they...
That's right.
And then they disappointed us.
Right.
But that was in 2003.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Come on. Got to get over that.
I'm looking at this now, this article which says, Welcome Back Symantec, and tell us what that's about.
Well, I've kicked Symantec around a lot, especially in Forbes. I insisted when they went through several changes of CEOs that they had to work on innovation and not just streamlining operations, that they had to dump the Veritas division. And they finally listened to me. No, I can't take credit for it, but they are dumping the Veritas division, and that'll be final in January.
Yep, good for them.
And I've been watching them closely because they will come roaring back, and they have to now establish themselves once again as a security leader. I expect acquisitions on their part. That's a role that they used to always play.
Mm-hmm.
And I was quite impressed that they looked at, you know, what was going on out there, and they said, wow, we do not have, you know, an advanced analytic breach detection, advanced malware solution, similar to FireEye. A lot of people know about FireEye. It's a local sandbox, and you take all that malware that's coming in that's custom or zero-day, and you detonate it in that sandbox and then look at what it does and determine if the stuff is good or bad.
Right, right.
And so Symantec, you know, is launching their advanced threat protection that is that sandboxing, but they do it in the cloud. And it's cool because it's no different than what they've had to do for their own antivirus research.
Mm-hmm.
They're just commercializing it, making it available to their customers. And it can be very easy for existing customers to, you know, quickly take take that on because there's no hardware or additional software.
Richard, do you think that means that for consumers, we can again begin to trust the name Symantec for our own computers and tablets and things that we're going to protect?
No, because you won't have access to this technology.
Okay. Yeah. This is on a macro level, it sounds like.
Well, businesses use them all the time.
Well, and thank heavens for that. You know, they're getting out of, if you will, puttering around in the consumer area and trying to be much more effective on a larger scale.
Well, that goes back to the question that you know we were talking about earlier about smaller businesses being the breaches and stuff like that. So what is the protection community doing to make sure that they could provide that type of sophistication to all levels of business? Because price becomes an issue.
Yeah, and it's, you know, the most sophisticated technology is being launched for the enterprise first, and then there will be other people to figure out how to turn that into a service, but it'll still be up to us, you know, unless Apple and Dell step up to the plate and actually start, you know, embedding this stuff in their computers, it'll be up to us to search around and find the best stuff, you know, just like you do when you get infected, you start looking for, you know, and you usually find malware bytes and install that, cleans you up, and you're good to go for a few months. And that's going to be the case with some of these new things coming out to protect you.
Richard, just quickly before we step out of here, looking ahead, what kind of training are the new generation of tech experts going to need?
Well, you know, I'm a real fan of vocational kind of education. So you need to get the experience both on the network side for, you know, watching the activities, behavior-based things, NetFlow analysis, packet analysis. On the endpoint side, sophisticated reverse engineering capability is going to be really, really employable. Tons and tons of opportunity. Unfortunately, the big push is for more STEM education on this. And most of the STEM programs I see focus solely on policy and not on hands-on, you know, get your fingers dirty stuff.
So there, I'm just looking at Ed and Cal because they're hands-on people. The good news is that kind of hands-on experience is really going to become important.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you bet.
Extremely, extremely important. Richard, thanks so much for being with us. Richard Steen has been our guest. We were talking about cybersecurity. And again, it's always fascinating to have you with us. His book is called There Will Be Cyber War, a whole other area of discussion that we could have. But thanks so much, Richard, and have a great week.
Me too.
All right, thank you.
Bye-bye.
Good to have him for those comments. And coming back in just a moment, we're going to be hearing a kind of a story of somebody coming back home and discovering a brand new, perhaps, Silicon Valley growing in his old hometown. That's Andy Basile from Young Basile and Troy. We'll be our guest in just a moment here when we return back with the Internet Advisor. Hey, by the way, 2 hours of this goodness. All the way to 6 o'clock. Get a chance to answer your questions. Thank you for sticking with us here on The Internet Advisor. I'm Foster Brown, co-host and producer of the program, along with Gary Baker, Ed Riddell, and Cal Carson. We're kind of a regular team here that can be heard from 4 to 6 p.m. regularly on WJR. And then also throughout our network, the Michigan Talk Network, and through our podcast, which can be downloaded every Sunday evening, starting every Sunday evening, from internetadvisor.net. You'll find it there. And so that if you don't hear us live on WJR, you can catch the program there, the 2 hours of the program. First hour is with guests like our next one, Mr. Andy Basile, who is with us from Young Basile, a law firm in Troy now, but kind of a young man who has come back home. I'll say young man, okay, Andy? That's okay?
Maybe not too young.
Well, you
it's
left...
radio, no one knows that, right?
You left Detroit many moons ago to go to California, to the West Coast, and was the firm Young Basile formed out there, or had it existed before you went out?
The firm is a long-standing Michigan law firm. I worked at other firms for many years.
I see. Okay. But the work that drew you out there, if I'm understanding correctly, was work with the then kind of growing internet industry, the Silicon Valley industry.
Exactly. I was one of the first lawyers in the 1990s to focus on the internet, and I ended up running the internet department of a large Silicon Valley law firm in San Francisco.
Wow. That must have become an exciting time because it was a wild west, you know. How did you strap your six shooters on and go out and try to deal with things, aren't you?
It was an amazing time.
What were some of the big issues that you ran into in those early days of dealing with the internet?
I think uncertainty. It was a new media, and people just had no idea what was going to happen. And so if you held yourself out as an expert with an answer, you were in great demand.
Mm-hmm. That's kind of how we started this radio show.
Yeah, that's true. There were lots of questions out there. But, I mean, what are some of the issues you were dealing with? Like, not privacy so much, but I'm thinking of patent and protecting ideas,
intellectual property. Right.
Well,
IP.
I think the biggest early issue were domain names.
Oh, yeah.
I recall it was a big deal and still is today. I remember looking into it in 1993 and kicking myself even today for not registering every domain name I could have thought of.
Well, even as late as 98, my son was born, and my wife said, well, let's make him Justin, name him Justin. And I said, just a minute. I went out to GoDaddy, and JustinBaker.com was available. I said, sure, we'll name him Justin. Why not, right? He had to have his own domain.
Did you register?
And we did, yeah.
Oh,
it's,
yeah.
It's Justin at JustinBaker.com.
I love it.
You know, these Ann Arbor people, we really have to have a long, long talk with them.
My daughter's Lauren at LaurenBaker.com. They have their own domain name.
I love it. But I imagine that cyber squatting then became an issue where people would squat on Coke.com, or it wouldn't be, obviously it wouldn't be that necessarily, but some of the other names that were significant.
It was a huge issue, and the rules were not clear, and the procedures for removing a cyber squatter were not established.
Right.
So what were some of the other things that you can remember just in general? I know you can't talk about specifics, but just in general, were other areas other than domain names in those early days?
Privacy at the very beginning was a major issue and still is.
Mm-hmm. Mm, big issue. Now, you have since come back to the Detroit area. Why come back from sunny California, other than you've been on the wrong side of the San Andreas Fault?
Great fear of earthquakes. I came back 10 years ago for family.
Oh, yeah, good.
We've heard that often, that people who have been very successful on the West Coast have come back for quality of life, too. They've talked about being a very big
factor. So you must have seen when you left, right? It was a very different time, and you saw some great technology out there and some great technology companies coming back here 10 years ago. Tell us a little bit about what you think are the differences back when you first came back, and now maybe what we're doing about it and what you see we're doing about it. Are we catching up maybe, or are we going in a different direction?
Oh, we're catching up.
Okay.
No question. When I left 10 years ago and I told people in Silicon Valley that I was moving back to Detroit, it was as if I were telling them I was headed to, you know, Timbuktu. People said, well, what will you do for a living there? And how will you feed your family? And when I arrived, I sort of understood where they were coming from, in terms of it seemed it was a world away from Silicon Valley. But in the last 10 years, I think there's been some tremendous changes.
Where have you seen the biggest changes?
Motor vehicles.
Mm. So tell us what you think.
Well, I think that if you read the papers, you'll see a lot of interest emanating from Silicon Valley in the motor vehicle industry. And this was something that just, from my perspective, did not exist 10 years ago. You know, Tesla is a great example of what we're talking about. And I think this has become a phenomenon. And it's helped converge these two business communities.
Is there a kind of a growing respect, you think, I'm kind of getting an undercurrent of that in Silicon Valley for what's going on in Detroit?
I would say maybe grudging, not growing.
Not that. Why
course,
grudging?
We would probably do the same, so I understand.
I think, it has been my experience sometimes that a supplier of electronics, for example, would decide to enter the automobile market with great confidence, and then after a year or two would say to me, oh my gosh, 15 parts per million defect rate, how can we do that? So I think the automobile industry is a tough industry, and I think people who have entered it in recent years probably are learning that it's not quite as easy as it may have seemed.
Well, and I think there's not a good appreciation of the scale of the industry. I dealt with Mark Andreessen, a name from the very beginning of, you know, the graphical browser wars, started a group that developed Mosaic at the time, and then Netscape afterwards, and he was, we enticed him to come talk to us, and he wanted to take and put his next company some software on some of the servers at GM, and only wanted to do it on maybe 10% of the servers in this one group. And, you know, we told him that that's like 3,000 servers. And he says, no, just 10%. We said, that is 10%. And he went, no, then how about 1%? You know, he just misunderstood scale. And that happened all the time with people that didn't really know the auto industry.
It's interesting to get on that Delta nonstop flight to San Francisco, you know, Monday morning and talk to the people next to you. And I have noticed in recent years, a lot of those people are from tier one, tier two suppliers. So, foot.
Yeah.
And I think it's a great opportunity for Detroit and also potentially a bit of a threat.
I think you're right on both counts.
We're talking with Andy Basile, who is with Young and Basile here in Detroit, and had worked in Silicon Valley for many years, came back to the Detroit area. Now, do you commute back and forth, or do you cyber commute?
I fly out about once a month.
Okay, wait, so you don't yet and take the red eye back. I had a son-in-law who did that every week for a number of years. He was working for Accenture and had accounts on the West Coast that he had to go to. And I just, my hat's off to anybody who makes that kind of commute. Talk about commutes, what a brutal commute that would be.
Well, when I first came to Detroit, I did go back weekly, year and a half. Went back so frequently that I began to make friends on the Thursday night red eye.
Andy, a question for you, because we're coming close to the end of our time that we have here. What do you think is we need to do here in the Detroit, not just in Detroit, because this broadcast is also heard across the state of Michigan and Western
outside,
Michigan as well.
And outside of Michigan as well.
You know, so we're talking about the western part of Michigan, Grand Rapids and Muskegon and Lansing in the center of the state, et cetera. What do we need to do to make this more of an internet-rich kind of culture?
Right. It's a great question. I'm glad you asked me. You know, Detroit was the Silicon Valley of its age at the beginning of the 20th century. I think it could be so again. There are two things that need to change. I think the business culture needs to evolve to be much more collaborative and risk-oriented to this in Silicon Valley. And in my opinion, we need to complement that with a change to our built environment. We have a sort of stratified suburban model of living, and certainly are many wonderful things happening in Detroit, but I think if we want to attract and retain and make effective the kinds of people who drive Silicon Valley, we need to greatly accelerate the wonderful efforts already underway to have quality, walkable cities.
So yeah, you and I talked a lot about that via email back and forth about, you know, walkable and what does that mean, and you were saying that the Woodward Corridor should be reconfigured to be much more walkable, and in some cases that's happening right now.
Absolutely. Ferndale's a great example of that.
Yeah. Andy, I want to thank you very much for being with us. And by the way, we have somebody who's been a silent partner here, Allison Jaworski, who's been kind of smiling at Andy and the rest of us as we've been talking. Thank you very much for joining us as well. And I hope some of the things you've been talking about really take place here and grab hold. It looks like it's happening. And heaven help us. These days in downtown Detroit remind me of many years ago in downtown Washington, D.C., when they were putting the metro in. It was a nightmare getting around downtown D.C., but what a difference that metro has made in the quality of life and culture in our nation's capital and the areas around it. And right. So I'm hopeful.
I'll just put in a plug, too. You know, it's great for companies here to have somebody that really has a foot in both worlds.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that would be very good in Young and Basile.
Andy,
thank you
so much for being with us. Andy, by the way, will be a guest on M Squared TechCast. That's with Mike Brennan and Matt Rausch, and that'll be coming up at the beginning of the week. And I'll tell you a little bit more about that in the coming hour. Stand by. We've got some more comments coming up in just a moment. Thank you so much for joining us here on a Saturday afternoon, a Halloween afternoon. with my co-host Gary Baker, Ed Rudell, and Cal Carson. Yeah. And by the way, salute, thank you to the newly married Ed, Eric Dortch, who's our engineer. New to married life, still grinning from ear to ear. Glad to have him there. Ed, I want you to share something that we were discussing as a kind of a practical matter. All of us, I think, who have used the internet have at one time or other downloaded something.
Yes.
It may have been an app for our cell phone. It may have been a small program for our computers, any number of things. And you discovered something the other day that I think was really worth talking about.
Well, there's two things. First is I wanted to prepare an old tablet that I had for my father and so that he can use it. And when I was in the Google Play Store and I wanted to download a free app, if it wanted more than four or five items to sniff at on my tablet, mm-hmm. I would not download that free app. I don't mind it having access to my pictures and maybe my Wi-Fi access.
Oh, okay,
and my
that's
location
what you mean by
services.
Sniff at. It wanted access to
it
all sorts of different.
Access to, you know, some of them want access to everything, especially the gambling ones, the casino ones,
and they don't need it.
They don't need it. Yeah. So that's why they're free. They want to get that information.
That's the price.
Yes.
And so just
they do not need access to my default email application.
So
there's
a warning. Right. Number one warning when you're downloading something, folks, watch out for what it wants to connect to. And you don't have to allow it to connect to anything.
Yes.
And by the way, a lot of them want to connect to your contacts.
Yes.
Right? And I never allow them to do that. If I want to use that app with one of my contacts, I will make that decision. Somebody else won't take my contacts, and who knows what they're going to do with them. Well, I know what they're going to do with them. They're going to go market to them.
Yes,
yeah,
right?
Exactly.
So all the people that I, or all the companies that are marketing to me, I know that somebody, one of my friends, I guess that's the term I will use.
Former friends.
If I could find out who it is, they won't be my friend any longer. I want to be off of their contact list. Yeah. But that's what they do. So, please, if you like your friends, don't sign up.
Watch out for what they want to connect to. What are some of the other things you discovered?
The other thing is I wanted to download this application and reload an Android operating system on this HP tablet that I had. HP had a tablet cut with the Palm OS on there. Mm-hmm. Of course, that went south very quick. They stopped manufacturing it. But I had the ability to install a version of Android on there that makes it still a very relevant and functional unit.
Now, this may be Chinese to many of the people who are listening, except what you discovered when you were downloading things.
So, yes. So when I went to an article that was 3 years old from 2012, and the article had YouTube videos on there, step-by-step instructions, and links to download the utilities and the packages I needed to load this version of Android. The article was still good. Unfortunately, the website that it it pointed to had been poisoned.
Now, tell me what you mean by poisoned.
That the file that I was attempting to download was not the correct file anymore. So instead of it being a 256 megabyte file, which luckily the author actually says this file should be 256 megabytes.
Oh, that was really good.
So I'm going to have to amend how I, in my utilities on the Internet Advisor, I'll actually specify the sizes on there. So for that same reason, because it's very helpful. When I went to these sites to download it, it was only 250 or 600K. And it was an executable, not a PKZ file, which is it's a package file.
It's a package file. Yeah. So here's the thing that you're talking about. To translate a little bit.
So what happened was that the download site had somehow been compromised.
Yes.
And someone actually put on their viruses.
So that smaller file, and there's a little giveaway that has been poisoned, the smaller file being an executable meant that was the malware that was coming down disguised as
a legitimate download. Had the same file name. So you wonder why this can happen. And my antivirus software, I actually downloaded one of them, and neither one of the antiviruses, Malwarebytes, nor Microsoft Security Essentials or the Defender, during the download process, flagged it as being malicious.
Wow. Kel, you were going to say something?
Because you've invited it on
to your
computer. You said, no, I want to download this.
I wonder if that's the case. Yeah. Anyway, Kel, you were going to say
I think this goes back to the same old saying, same old adage for years and years and years. There is no free lunch.
Absolutely.
And I always have a problem with using free software that doesn't come from like a manufacturer that's trusted. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I always look at it with a grain of salt. I mean, some of it, a lot of it out there can be very, very good because there's young people, young companies starting up, trying to get their product going, and they'll give it away free in the beginning, and then maybe later on as they add features, they'll charge more and stuff for it. But be very wary of what you get for freeware because you have to check it out thoroughly using some of the guidelines that Ed gives because there is no free lunch.
I found and that's a difference. There's a distinction between what Cal's pointing out and what I was talking about. The site was actually compromised and most of its download was now poisoned, were actually viruses.
Yeah, and these were
probably unbeknownst to the people actually that are hosting those downloads.
And that's what, folks, what we're trying to make you aware of and hopefully as a public service, make you aware that when you're downloading, a lot of these sites that have legitimate downloads have been poisoned. The bad guys have gotten in and have compromised those things, so they've swapped them out. So what looked like a legitimate file is now a poison file.
And be aware that the fact that we're not just talking about downloading programs for running on your computers. It can be the same poisoning can be done to music, to movies, and all those sort of things. So everything with a grain of salt.
Right.
It can even be a website. Yes. And that's a lot of times what will happen is the virus or the malware will hide itself, and it's called cryptography, right? It'll hide itself in the image, and it's very hard to detect.
Thanks, Ed, for that. I want to jump quickly. Cal, we wanted to do something. Maybe we can do a piece of it now and a piece of it at the beginning of the next or during the next hour as well.
It's an Apple product, so you can do it in pieces.
That's true. In our next hour, by the way, we're going to be inviting you to call us and get free advice. Now, that you can trust. You can download that from Cal and Ed and Gary with all good faith. You can call us at 800-859-0957 here right now during this next hour with your question about a computer, about the internet, about whatever you're having with your device, and we'll do our very best to answer that. But Cal, before we go to that, quickly, Apple released their new Apple TV, which is not a big old new TV to be able to watch things on, but it's actually one of
a set-top box.
Set-top box. That was what I'm looking for. So what are some of the highlights of that?
Well, for one, if you're going to get involved with this Apple TV, the first thing I probably would say is if you're a gamer, you want to go with the larger of the two because of the ability to be able to store more stuff on it. It comes in a 64 gigabyte configuration and a 32 gigabyte configuration. The remote control for this Apple TV has been coming in with rave reviews on it because it's just slicker than heck. It allows you to be able to actually remotely control it with your voice using the Siri interface.
Wow.
So it's working really, really well. There's a lot of people that normally wouldn't say, hey, you know, I like this type of product, and they're actually starting to say they do.
Maybe we can talk about this in the second hour. There's an app store now for the TV, isn't there?
Yes, it is.
So you can actually download some specific apps to work with your Apple TV. We'll talk a little bit more about that in the second hour. Thanks, Cal. By the way, again, coming up in that second hour, your questions, and you can start calling right now to get in line, 800-859-0957. 800-859-0WJR. That's the number to call. Start lining up, and we are going to be hearing from Mr. Mike Brennan and from you as well.
You're listening to a podcast of the Internet Advisor Show. To see the show notes for this program, visit our homepage, theinternetadvisor.net. You'll discover past podcasts, our free toolkit with software to clean up your computer and keep it running strong, and many other resources. You'll also find links to mitechnews.com, our co-sponsored weekly tech and entrepreneur newsletter, edited by Mike Brennan. If you have a question for our hosts, just click the contact button on the homepage and send us an email with the details. And don't forget to look for us on Facebook and Twitter and at Detroit's newest podcast network, podcastdetroit.com. Now, let's get back to the second hour of the Internet Advisor. Welcome to the Internet Advisor, hour number two, which we officially declare your hour. That's when you can call us and you decide what the topic of the conversation will be. Have you got a question about your computer, about getting around the Internet, or sometimes getting over the problems you find there? Give us a call at 800-859-0957 right now. That's 800-859-0957. We have a whole group of techs in here waiting to answer your question. Thank you again for joining us here for hour number two.
of the Internet Advisor. I'm Foster Brown. Gary Baker, Ed Riddell, and Cal Carson are with us here in studio. A great team of tech experts ready to answer your questions. And we have Joe from Livonia has got his toe dipped in the water. We're getting ready to answer his question coming up in just a short bit. And you can get in line to get your question answered. And please don't wait to the end of this hour. As often happens, people will say, oh, I wonder if I should, or they're getting kind of cold feet on this and figuring that, maybe my question is dumb. No. The only dumb question is the one you don't ask, because it helps so many people. So again, the phone number is 800-859-0957. And before we start answering those questions, Mr. Mike Brennan is here with us. He's the editor of MI Tech News, which is a great resource for those of you who are interested in finding out what's going on in technology and in entrepreneurship in our state. It's an absolutely free news service. It's got all sorts of great aspects for you, and it's absolutely free. And Mike, welcome again to the Internet Advisor.
Thanks, Foster. Always happy to update everybody on what's going on.
By the way, we're delighted to have one of the people that you've had as a guest on your M-Squared TechCast. That is Andy Basile, who was with us on the show just a little bit earlier, talking about the differences between Silicon Valley and Detroit, and great insights on his part.
Yeah, and as you know, he's from Young & Basile, which is a patent attorney, intellectual property attorney, and, you know, obviously has a foot in both both big tech hubs, Detroit and Silicon Valley.
Absolutely. All right, Mike, let's take a look at, give people kind of an idea of what you're doing out there with your MI Tech News, with some of the headlines that you've got there. So let's look at a selection of them. Current Motor has won the Michigan Mobile Prize Competition.
Yeah, it's they make a electric motorcycle with this really cool charging station that's powered by solar energy, and you can plug four of these bikes in, so, you know, when you get done doing whatever you're doing, you can jump back on the bike, it's fully charged. And so they won this competition, $5,000, but they're going to get a lot of opportunities to meet people that can help them really make this thing go.
Wow.
And that was sponsored by Next Energy and U of M Sustainable Mobility and Accessibility Research Transportation Institute.
Apparently,
wow, that's a mouthful. Huh?
Easy for you to say.
Yes.
I see that
it
may help them to travel to an award ceremony in New Delhi, India, pay for the fare.
Yeah. So.
All right. The next headline there is, I love this one. And Gary, apparently you were there to hear
so,
this.
So was Mike. We sat together.
Yeah, all three of us. But Matt wrote this. I just picked it up from Matt because he did such a nice job with it. So we were just, you know, we get this little scrum with the governor after these big events. So everyone's asking their questions. And I can't remember who asked it, whether it was Matt or somebody else, but have you ever been hacked? And the governor says, yeah, I had my ID stolen, discovered I had an apartment in Washington, D.C., and some credit cards I didn't know I had. And I go, well, probably having a good time, though, aren't you? You know? And he goes, no, that's not it. So,
that was a while ago.
Before he was governor, back when he was a humble businessman.
All right.
Venture capitalist.
Final headline was that Mike Ilitch, the man behind the Detroit Red Wings, and sports and a lot of good stuff happening in Detroit, has donated $40 million to build a brand new business school for Wayne State University.
Yeah, that whole block that's pretty blighted right now behind the Fox Theater going down to the Masonic Temple, that whole area is going to be, in the next couple of years, just wow, like
wow.
Disneyland. And part of that's going to be this 120,000 square foot business school named the Mike Ilitch Business School. I'm not sure if it was Wayne State Business School, but Mike Ilitch's name is in there somewhere. But heck, $40 million, why not, right?
So. Oh, wow. Absolutely excellent to see that. Well, folks, these are the kind of headlines that you'll see if you receive MI Tech News in your email inbox every Wednesday and Friday. And Wednesdays, you'll get the audio components, and that is our podcast, IT in the D, the M-Squared TechCast.
Tech Talk Divas.
The Tech Talk Divas will be there. So that's kind
Michigan
of...
Michigan Mobile Musings.
That's right.
Yeah. The Technology Mobile Wireless Association.
So it's a veritable smorgasbord of audio elements of tech around technology. And then on Fridays, you'll get another dose, and this is the headlines. And by the way, I got to say, Mike, I really like the new format that you have online.
Yeah, very nice.
So much easier to pick our topics.
Very clean.
Everybody's been saying that. Unfortunately, I had to dump the old one. But, you know, that's because we spent a lot of time building, and then we discovered Google's new rules, and we had to start from scratch. So what do you do, right? But, so we got this one right. It's really good. It's
absolutely
mobile-friendly. It looks solid, and everybody loves it.
It's absolutely excellent. And the price of all of this is absolutely nothing. You get this for free, both of those elements, and there'll be video coming in, matter of fact, in 2016. So it's a great deal, and this is contrary to what Cal was saying at the first hour. You know, this is one of those free lunches that is indeed a free lunch and well worth
Cal,
getting.
Yeah, you know, you got to watch him. So.
Mike, thanks so much for being with us.
All right, thanks, guys. It's fun. Let's do it again next week.
All right, thank
you. Sounds good, Mike.
And if you would like to get your copy of MI Tech News, either one of those, simply go to internetadvisor.net, and after the show, we'll have a posting there where you can click on the Subscribe Now button down next to Mike's smiling face, or you can go to mitechnews.com and subscribe there. That's Mr. Mike Brennan. Well, coming up in just a moment, by the way, we're going to be taking your phone calls, and we've got, a whole bunch of people, John and Shelley and Joe waiting, and hey, how about you? Your question, and Ed and Cal and Gary and I are going to start answering those right after the break. And here's the phone number, toll free, 800-859-0957. That's 800-859-0957. And John from Detroit, we're going to be talking with you about your Lenovo when we come back here with the Internet Advisor, hour number two, answering your questions. It is a delight to be able to be here on this Halloween Saturday afternoon and evening to take your questions live. By the way, during the rest of the times that we're not here live on WJR, you can get a question to us anytime, 24/7, by going to internetadvisor.net. And there is a contact button in our toolbar. You simply click on that, put your email address in there, and send us your question. And during the week, we will very faithfully get to answer those. All right, let's go into Detroit and say hello to John. Welcome to the Internet Advisor. John, how can we help you?
Hi. I've got a problem with my Lenovo. It's a B50 Touch, and it keeps stopping on me.
Okay.
Because I've got problems, and it won't restart. So it keeps recycling. Finally, I rebooted it, mm-hmm. you know, from the original,
mm-hmm.
and the original reset, which eliminated all the programs that didn't come with it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Then, okay.
Well, I just loaded two programs, and it keeps doing it. It says unusual shutdown.
Hmm.
So is it crashing? Okay, so now that we're dealing with a factory restored computer with no extraneous applications, what operating system is it running right now?
8.1 or whatever it is.
It is running 8.1. And so you're in the computer when you're using it. Does everything seem to work fine?
It's just that while I'm doing my job, which is mobile. Doing reports and filling out forms, but so, all of a sudden it just crashes on me.
So it crashes, or does it go to sleep and when you shut the lid and won't wake up? I mean, I'm sorry, that's what the distinction I want to make. So you're saying it's actually crashing? Okay,
it's crashing. Okay. It's saying it's not working right.
Bye bye. Yeah. Okay.
So when did this start?
A month ago.
And was there anything that happened just prior to that? Did you download additional applications?
I may have.
Yeah.
So, okay. And by the way, is it when it shuts down, does it shut down after a certain number of minutes each time?
Mm.
Or is it random?
Random.
So you could be doing any program. It doesn't matter what program you're in. And it could go for 20 minutes and then shut down, and it could go for 5 minutes and shut down.
No, it's it could go a day.
Oh, okay.
Okay, for okay. even longer.
But I'm running two programs concurrently. I'm running Windows Streets and Trips 2013 Trial Edition, and I'm also using Mac Pro.
Okay. And while you're using it, could it shut down? Could it just stop working?
No, it's when I want to start using it again, and I look and
okay, so it doesn't happen while you're using a program?
Nope.
Okay, so you walk away from it, you come back to it, and suddenly it won't, it will just have...
It says a computer has to restart because it's screwed up. Well, it won't restart.
Well, you know, the best thing, we need the actual errors.
Yeah, I was just going to say, it doesn't say screwed up, but that's what happens. But do you know what it says? Because that will help.
The original error. In other words, what we're asking for, John, is the error message itself.
So it's not a blue screen. So it's probably saying something like.
Yes, it is a blue screen.
So it doesn't give you an error message. It just says
that Windows stopped working for some reason or other. It might give an error message, but I don't remember what it is.
Okay.
But it's a blue screen.
So if we can't solve it on the air, and we're going to give you a couple ideas, but. If we can't,
As of right now, I'm at system restore.
Okay.
Okay.
And it says Windows Module Installer, type install. But then down at the bottom, it doesn't give me a next. It gives me a back or it gives me a cancel.
All right. Here's what we're going to do, because it does sound like this is a more complicated thing. I'm guessing I'm a hardware issue. What do you think, Ed, between hardware and software? What would your guess be?
I would think, well, it could be either one, actually. Okay. And the actual error message would tell you if it's hardware or software.
Okay.
I mean, it could be anything from overheating, but it doesn't sound like it because it's so random. A memory could be going bad. He might want to run check your disk for errors by using Microsoft's error checking utility. It could be a number of things that are doing this. What concerns me is he did a factory recovery, put it back to Windows 8.1, and it's still doing the same thing. Yeah. Now he's trying to do a system restore, which is only going to restore it back a couple days or whatever, and it's probably still going to have the same problem. So one of the things I would do is go to the Lenovo website and download and find your model number of computer and then download updates. So go to their website, download the new audio drivers for it, the video drivers, stuff like that.
Okay.
But I sort of doubt that's it because he's experienced the problem before. Mm-hmm. And then not even now.
Even after a factory reset. So, John, here's what we're going to do, because we could go on for a long time on this. We want you to go to our homepage, internetadvisor.net, and then hit that contact button. Then you'll find a big space there that you can put in your comment, your questions, give us a little more information. And if
you can get the error code.
And the error code. And then during the week, we'll get back to you, because this is going to take a lot more time than we can possibly get to right now on the air. But thanks.
But he's done a lot of good things.
Oh, you've done a lot of good things on this.
And with the error code, I think we can help him.
Yep. And that'll be our next level of challenge, okay? Let's go back. Let's see. We can go to our next caller, this one from Detroit again. Hey, Shelly in Detroit, how are you doing? I think it's Shelly, or is it Shelby? How are you doing?
Yes, it is. Hi.
Hi.
My question is, my first question, that is internetadvisor.net.
Yes.
If I give you my email address,
yes,
how do I know that it's from you? Say I go into my email and I get another email from you. Is there a way that I know for sure that it's from internetadvisor.net?
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense.
Could it be a phishing website that scares me?
Oh, yeah.
I'm a novice.
So it'll make a lot of sense and give you great value. That's how you know it's from us. So.
We're teasing. actually, he's right. It will also say that it's from internetadvisor.net.
And you make a very good point, Shelley.
Yeah.
What you want to do is you want to look and make sure that it's not misspelled or coming from something else.
That's my other question now.
Well, you don't want anybody to slip an I in there or something that's hard to see. So
what we're going to do is on the Internet Advisor's website, when you select the contact us, it's going to ask you for your friendly name. And it's going to ask you for your email address. It's going to ask you to type in a description of what problem you're experiencing.
Right.
And it'll be sent to all of us on the Internet Advisor. So Foster, Gary, or I will be replying.
And Cal and Shane.
Okay.
Any one of us would reply. And the reply to address, you'll actually see it says @internetadvisor.net. Your original syntax that you provided us will be included in there, and we're going to address your concerns in there or questions.
And Cal, you were going to say something?
And we don't sell your email address.
No.
Okay. Definitely don't.
Hang on, Shelley. Cal had a... Shelley?
Is that dangerous somehow? I'm really new at this.
All right. Shelley, hang on a second. I want you to ask that question, but Cal, you had a thought?
Well, I was just wondering whether or not in Windows, isn't there something where you can hover over the address and it'll show you whether it's a real link or a bad link or something to have?
You can actually really see what the what Cal's bringing up. It's interesting. This is the guy from the Apple world. But in Windows, if you take your mouse, the little cursor, the little arrow, and you hover over the area where the email address is, it will tell you where it's really coming from. Yeah. And that is a great way to find spam.
And she's on her phone.
And where it's really coming from should be internetadvisor.net.
Right, exactly. And if it says anything else, that's where you find out where the bad guys are. Now, I'm going to put you on hold for a second so I can get that second question you had, all right?
Okay,
so hang on, we'll come back to you. For the rest of you folks out there, if you're listening to us right now and would have a question for us, we still have half of an hour to go. And the number is 800-859-0957. Again, that number is 800-859-0957. Give us a call. I'd be happy to give an answer. Thank you for joining us here on The Internet Advisor. This is your hour. Ask your questions. And remember that the only dumb question is the one you don't ask. 800-859-0957. Joe and Clark will be getting to you in just a little bit. Shelly, I want to get back to you because you asked one other question, and I want to see if I can get that answer, but you need to ask it quickly. So go ahead and ask a question.
Okay. It's so overwhelming. Where do you advise for a beginner to start learning about internet security and privacy?
Internet security and privacy.
It's overwhelming.
Yeah, you're right. It does seem overwhelming.
Are you on your phone?
I'm on my phone. This is my internet.
So you use your phone, not a computer?
At this time, correct.
Okay, so the
permissions, my gosh. Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, I was just going to say the good thing is that a phone, because it's not as flexible as a computer, you're not as susceptible to to viruses and bad things that can happen, right?
Yeah, but we're, like we were talking at the beginning of the show, one of the things that you do have to be concerned about is the type of apps you download.
That's right.
And so the type of all those applications that you have that you download, usually when you install them, they'll ask you, do you wish to allow this application access to your contacts, your phone, your calendar, your photos and stuff? So I usually choose applications that only require a couple things, like location-based. Well, that makes sense because it's a mapping program and stuff like that. So usually three or four items, I'll go for those free apps, but I won't install an application that wants access to everything.
And then the other thing
application control is so important because I'm looking at the application permissions on my phone, things I can't even control, and it's scary as heck.
Good for you.
These are pre-downloaded.
Yeah, you don't have to be scared. You have to be vigilant because a lot of us have apps and a lot of apps on our phones. But like Ed said, and as we said before, you just have to be very careful what you allow them access to. I never allow them access to anything they don't absolutely need. If it's a map program, like Ed said, got to let them know what your location is.
Well, since we're talking to Mr. Mobility, would it be good to warn her in relation to using Wi-Fi as opposed to LTE?
I don't believe so. Obviously, Wi-Fi is a little more open, but with the phone, I'm not sure that I would use Wi-Fi every chance I get just because it's cheaper data, right? It's free data as opposed to LTE, which is the cellular data that you buy from your cellular provider, your mobile provider.
Okay, so you don't see any security issues there?
There's a little bit more, potentially, but we haven't seen much yet.
Shelly,
that may change next week.
Thank you. But I'm going to be emailing you lots of questions.
Good. We love to hear that. You go ahead and do that, Shelly. Thanks so much for being here on The Internet Advisor.
And Foster's going to answer them.
I get the point.
Thanks, Shelly. Those were good questions.
Joe from Livonia, thank you for your patience, and how can we help you?
Hi, guys. Thanks for answering and taking the call.
Sure.
What you guys were just talking about that Ed had talked about earlier, I've got Macs, straight Macs, and I'm wondering because I guess I got to break this into two parts. One is that I've got a newer Mac, and I've got one that's using OS 10.5 and before.
Mm-hmm.
On the OS 10.5 systems, I don't remember seeing anything that asked me, you know, do I want to allow it access to this, that, or the other thing that I've just downloaded. Is that basically a Windows type setup, or should I be seeing that on my Mac? And or should I be seeing that on my Mac only on the newer system? and then something else you guys had indicated.
Well, hang on, Joel. Let's tackle that first before we get too far from that question.
Well, I mean, this is just going to take a quick second, and that is the hovering of the cursor over the address. Mm-hmm. It happens on my Mac, too.
Okay. That's a good point, then, that that's an excellent way of discovering who really is sending you email or link or any link that shows up there. Am I right, guys? Anything that little blue link, you'll hover over it, and you'll see that, for instance, with a lot of phishing scams, if you hover over, you know, just click this and go to your bank, it's not to your bank, it's to somebody else in Eastern Europe.
So you just want to make sure it's called the URL, right? It's the address.
So, Kel, he brings up a good point. So when I was referring to when you install apps, I was talking about smartphone applications, and I was using, specifically, I was talking about Android applications or Google, from the Google Play Store. So if I was to use iTunes, which I haven't used that frequently, when you install an iTunes application, does it also disclose what it requires access to?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's somewhere as far as access that iTunes is going to be using, it's all in that agreement that you got on there. But for the most part, it really doesn't say, well, I'm going to be using this, I'm going to be using this. As far as I know, it just installs.
Not on the laptop, on the phone.
I'm talking about the iPhone. Remember, I'm talking smartphones.
Yeah, iPhone, it does. On the iPhone, it says, I want to use the camera, I want to use your contacts, I want to, and it goes from there.
And so, and that's the distinction I wanted to make for Joel. We were talking about smartphone devices and
not
tablets, not the Mac PCs.
It doesn't apply to either tablets or to computers?
Well, it refers to iPads and Android tablets. It's the same thing. They all use the Androids use the Google Play Store, and the iPhone and the iPad use iTunes. And so when you install applications from them, the App Store, that, yes, every time you install an app, it discloses what it requires access to. And you have to acknowledge that. Otherwise, you don't install the app.
That's not the case with
Macs or PCs.
Or you just say, no, don't have access to it. It'll install the app. It just won't give you access to whatever.
And in Cal, if I'm understanding correctly, remember, and I don't know which operating system it begins with Apple, but the operating system itself would not allow you to download third-party apps, period, unless you check that off in the security.
Yeah, Mavericks. No, yeah, I think it was with Mavericks. Yeah. In there, you can actually go into security under security and privacy and tell it whether or not you can allow third parties to download stuff or only from the App Store.
It was an extra security
than Mavericks.
Was it early?
Earlier than Mavericks. In that particular case, you have to have security set on your machine under the user and users and groups.
Right.
And then if you're turned on as admin, I believe it will allow you to download things, but it's going to prompt you, do you want to go ahead and download this? If you're not admin, it won't allow you to download anything. I mean, it won't allow you to install anything.
Now, Joe, did we get to your questions then?
Well, I'm still a little bit confused in regards to what Ed was saying. So if I'm running strictly Mac OS, not iOS,
it's
not something that I would normally see if I'm sitting there and installing a new app.
Right. That's exactly
true. You're not going to see that.
Yep, you're not going to see it.
The only way that you're challenged is by the security on the Mac, Cal was just saying. Because I was talking about were smart devices. I mean, not that a Mac isn't smart. God forbid I'd actually say that. What I'm talking about is your smartphone devices.
Get out of reach
tablets.
Of Cal.
Yeah. Every time I did that to Cal, he rolls his eyes at it.
Okay, Joe, thanks so much for giving us a call.
Thanks.
Appreciate it. All right. Let's head out, to Pontiac and say hello to Clark. Clark, thank you very much for calling us here on the Internet Advisor, and how can we help you?
Yes, good evening.
Good evening.
I too, am an Apple user.
Okay.
And I am frustrated with the number of commercial sites that don't seem to allow you to interact with them using Safari. I'm thinking of major airlines, a couple I could mention, a brokerage, national stock brokerage.
Hmm.
And even though they have icons that you can click, you can get either a long way through the process or early in the game, and then it just plain stops. When you inquire back through the system, they say, oh, yes, you're using an Apple.
Safari browser.
Chances
are you're using Safari, yeah.
The chances are really high. The issue that you're having, what version of the macOS are you using?
Oh, the latest, the one with that name that I keep
forgetting. Oh, El Capitan.
El Capitan, yeah.
Okay, so what you're going to want to...
It happened even in the past.
Are you in front of the computer right now?
No, I'm not. I'm safely stopped.
Okay. Yeah. It probably wouldn't be good to drive and compute.
Waiting for my wife to get out of church.
All right. This is what you're going to do. When you get home, you're going to start up Safari. And then when you go into Safari, you're going to click on the word Safari at the top and go down to Preferences. And when the Preference panel comes up, you're going to see some tabs across the top. Click on the one that says Security. And then once you click on the one that says Security, on there it'll say Web Content. And the second one down says Block Pop-Up Windows. And there's going to be a little check mark in that little blue box. Click on that box to take the check mark out, close up the preference box, and then go to those websites. And I probably nine times out of ten, it's going to work just fine.
So you're thinking it's basically pop-up blocker. Is the things are being blocked. So
as soon as he said airline, I used Delta's website and I was having a problem trying to do some things on there. I went in and turned off the pop-up blocker and everything worked.
So most of the time, like on some of the other browsers, it will say, do you want to allow pop-ups one time or for this site or just take it off?
Correct.
And a lot of times you might just say, because it comes up every time you have a pop-up, you say allow it once. And that allow it for that particular time.
Right.
There could be a potential for some of these sites that they'll use an ActiveX control or some control that you can't, that the Safari browser doesn't support. We keep telling website developers, look, don't disenfranchise people that use a different browser. Make sure that anybody, any way they can get to you. And it sometimes. They just don't do. They don't do what they need to help their.
They don't
their
do
customers.
Due diligence, right?
And then, of course, to help their customers. Mm-hmm.
We also have to remember to always do what we always say: have more than one browser on your computer.
Yeah. Yeah.
Download Chrome if it doesn't work in Safari after you do this adjustment. Download Chrome, install it, and then try it with that.
And the idea is that having two browsers allows you then to check and see where the problem
is. See if
it
is the browser. Right.
Clark, thanks so much for your call. We'll be back to answer Dennis's question and maybe yours before the show is over. It has been a delight being with you folks this afternoon and getting back in the saddle. I think all of us love the opportunity to interact with our listeners, and because it's so much fun kind of doing that problem solving. And again, you may not hear us live here on WJR with a sports schedule for a while, but every week we're recording a program here between 4 and 6. And if you have questions, what we do during the week is we collect those and then we'll play back the answers that we've had, or we may even call back some of the listeners who have sent us an email with the information in it about their problem, and we'll talk with them on the recorded version of the program. But we are here every week answering programs, and 24/7 you can get hold of us to ask us those questions by going to internetadvisor.net and then looking for the contact button at the top of the page there. Guys, thanks so much. It's been a ball here. By the way, thank you
very
much.
It's been a real treat, right?
Yeah. What a treat for a trick or treat.
Yeah. We've talked about a few tricks, but it's
that's
been a treat.
True. Mike Stett, thanks so much. And Eric Dortch as well, the guys behind the glass, for helping us. And maybe squeak in one more call after this one at 800-859-0957. Let's go to Dennis. Welcome to the Internet Advisor, Dennis, and how can we help you?
Thank you. I bought a new laptop with Windows 10.
Yeah.
And the CD player won't work. I understand that's a common problem, but you can buy a fix from Microsoft for, I think, $15, but that doesn't work very well. Do you know anything about that?
Well, I'm not aware of that. So does your laptop came with an integrated, probably a DVD player?
Yes.
And what are you trying to accomplish with it? Is it a data or movie CD or a music CD?
Just to do anything, load a program or anything you want to do, it just won't work.
I just bought this
around on the internet, and I find that it's a very common problem with Windows 10.
Now, you just bought this, and it was a Windows 10 when you bought it,
or was it a
8.1 that you had the
Windows 10 when I bought it.
So I would certainly contact the manufacturer and have them take it back if doesn't work.
Where did you buy it, Dennis?
Well, I bought the laptop at Costco.
Okay.
But I also bought a brand new desktop from Best Buy with Windows 10, and it won't work either without an external player.
Wait,
what's the problem with Windows 10?
Well, I mean, so it depends what you're trying to accomplish. If you're trying to watch movies...
No, I'm not trying to do that at all.
Are you trying to load programs? So you're trying to load programs?
Yes.
That you had on CD and you're trying to get them to work.
Yes.
So when you go to My Computer and you're browsing the CD, do you even see the data on the CD?
No, it won't even open it. It won't do anything.
Okay. Are these store purchase CDs out of curiosity or burned?
Yes.
They are.
It was a virus protection, actually, that I bought from Best Buy.
And I don't know. I haven't heard this at all. I'm not surprised. I mean, I can't remember I haven't seen a Windows 10 computer with a CD burner.
Now, let me ask you this question. You're saying, Dennis, that if you insert this CD with the security software on there that you bought at Best Buy, you put it in the tray and you put it in, that program will not run then.
It won't open it, period.
And you've tried it both on a desktop and you tried it on a laptop.
Yes. And I have another computer, Windows 7, and it'll open it fine.
Okay. It opens it fine there.
Yeah.
All right.
Like I said, I checked around on the internet. This is a very common problem. You find this all over the internet if you just Google it.
Yeah, but if you bought that at a store like Best Buy, I'd walk back in with that CD, with that machine, and say, hey, guys, look, this doesn't work. And they'll go like, oh, certainly it does. And they'll stick it in, and when it doesn't show, you go, okay, fine, make it work, and let them fix it. Because you paid a price for an operational machine out of the box.
And you bought one of... Yeah, and plus you bought their CD there from them as well.
Yeah, and you didn't pay for a machine that you had to take home, buy something additional for it, and fix it.
You know,
I agree with you, but I don't know. I don't know if they're going to be too receptive to that.
Well, I mean, you have to be.
You call us back if they are not.
We just got a call offline, and our engineer just told me this, that apparently Costco has a 2-year concierge service.
They do.
Yeah.
So I take it back to them.
In other words, you should be able to take it back to them and say, and how long ago did you buy this?
About a month ago.
Yeah,
it's
Windows 10. He bought it with Windows 10 on, so it has to be less than 3 months old.
But I also have a brand new desktop that
From
I paid
Buy.
Over $2,000 for with Windows 10 on it, and it won't work either.
Well, then I'd say in either of those cases.
Both of those
Microsoft
cases.
Problem.
Both those cases. Well, it may be Microsoft's problem, but the point is you shouldn't be struggling with it.
Well, just out of curiosity, for my own benefit, and I don't mind you doing this, who's the manufacturer? Is it Dell, HP, Acer? What's the manufacturer of the...
HP.
Yeah.
Okay, so this is both an HP laptop and an HP desktop.
No, it's an HP laptop, but the desktop is... It's a...
Dell?
No,
well, it doesn't really matter.
It's a water-cooled thing. I can't think of the name of it.
Really? Wow.
Yeah.
So the fact is that you expect it to work.
Absolutely.
They expect it to work when they sell it to you. If it's not, you just
bought it. You know, if this was me, what I would do, and I have this at home, I have an external USB DVD drive.
I have one, too.
And when you plug it in, did that work?
Yes, it did.
Ah.
See, it might be the type of internal... drive that they have on there. I'm suspecting, and I don't know this for sure, remember how you have plus R and minus R media?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And I think if you took that CD or whatever you had and burned it to the opposite media type, it might work.
It plus minus and plus and minus has nothing to do with a commercially made CD. You should be able to put it into either one.
Oh, that's true. Thank you, Kevin.
No problem at all.
But still, we're back to the point. If you go to Microsoft Store, they have a fix for this for $15.
Well, why are they charging you money to fix
a
problem?
That's a good question. After you paid for Windows 10, they want $15 to fix this, but everybody on the net says it doesn't fix it very well.
No, you know, this doesn't make sense because you hooked up an external USB drive, CD drive, and it worked out of the box. So in the old days, there used to be a problem with Microsoft in the registry, there'd actually be a corrupt registry location, and you go in there, you delete that registry location, and it repairs the CD drive because it would stop working. But that was back in the Windows XP days,
right?
Mm-hmm. You know that, and not I haven't heard of anything like that.
Costco is responsible for making sure that you're a satisfied customer. You paid good money for a device that you thought was going to work. Now, if it requires any of that stuff that it says the $15 of Microsoft one-off thing. Let Costco do that for you because paid a price for a functional device.
No, no, no.
But everybody on the net says it won't fix the problem.
I wouldn't do that.
Then I wouldn't.
I wouldn't pay $15.
Do yourself a favor then, Dennis, and don't pay the money.
Yeah, there are a lot of backseat drivers out there that think they know what they're doing, and they're getting their facts wrong. You know, I don't think that's the problem.
Dennis, I'm sorry we couldn't fix this for you ourselves, but it does sound like the old case of, you know, buyer beware, or, pardon me, that you should be able to go back to the place that you bought this place, especially just a month ago, and get it fixed. Thank you so much, all of you out there, for joining us. It's been fun to be back and in connection with our audience and being able to tackle these problems, although sometimes not being able to sort them out at the media time. I want to thank Gary Baker, Ed Riddell, and Cal Carson for being here on the air with me.
Happy Halloween.
Thank you very much. Have a great and a safe time out there with Halloween, and we will catch you back again.
You've been listening to the Internet Advisor Show, Detroit's longest-running, locally-produced computer show, with Foster Brown, Gary Baker, and our team of experts. For more information about our weekly show, to ask a question of our experts, or find the show notes for this podcast, visit InternetAdvisor.net and look for us on Facebook and Twitter. Don't forget to check the other great podcasts available on this PodcastDetroit.com network. Thank you for listening.